All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. Today is the power hour. We will do 1 or 2 hours, depends on your level of questions. So right now, this is your best opportunity. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic you want to talk to us about, press 1 on your phone right now and we'll get to you. But if you wait, maybe not. So let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the power hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, troubleshooting, electrical emissions, new technology, you name it. We'll talk about it and we'll answer your questions. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask. We're going to get to your questions in just a little bit. John and Ethan, welcome.
Hi, Kevin. Great to be here.
Hi, Kevin. As always, good to be here.
Yeah, good to see you guys last week. We don't get to do that very often. I got to warn you guys, we are heading into the time of the year where, you know, I say you guys do all the heavy lifting on this show. You're going to have to do the heavy lifting and the light lifting, and you might have to wake me up once in a while. We are getting so busy with this tax season. And I am somewhat frustrated with it as well. You know, I started doing owner-operator taxes back in 1990. And the reason I did it was because my first year in business in 86, I knew nothing about being in business. And, you know, I didn't pay any estimated taxes. And at the end of the year, I owed $12,000 and I didn't have $12 in my bank account. And it almost put me out of business. Yeah, and I just started making payments on it. And then a couple years later, I found a tax preparer who said, well, that doesn't sound right based on the numbers. Let me look at it. So I had it looked at. They got the $12,000 down to $8,000. I thought, well, that helps. But how does somebody make that big of a mistake? And so another year goes by. I found another tax preparer, and he says, oh, no. You know, they're not understanding that big tax law change we had just had in 1986. He said, let me do your return. He got it down to $4,000. And I thought, okay, something's really, really wrong when I either pay the government $12,000 or $4,000. I know which one I want. So how many other owner-operators are paying way too much in tax? So I actually learned how to do it myself and started doing it for my friends. And sure enough, the $4,000 was correct. And so I've been doing this a really, really long time. And what's frustrating me this year is we have another big tax law change. The professionals aren't even getting this right yet, not for owner operators. I've had to correct a lot of people on this. And yet we have amateur hour on Facebook. I am getting so frustrated with people giving tax advice, and their justification is, well, I had coffee with my CPA and he said this. Oh, okay. So 10,000 hours of studying tax law and you're okay with the advice you got over coffee and you think you should be spreading that around. Unbelievable. And the problem is some of these people are good at sounding like they know what they're talking about. And the advice is just awful. So I normally, John, I know you belong to a lot of forums and you see a lot of this kind of advice on different things. And I know it makes you crazy. And the best thing most of the time is just ignore it. You know, getting in arguments with these people is such a colossal waste of time. But on this tax issue, you know, I'm running a group to help people understand these things and get it right. And I feel like I have to dispute them. Like I can't let that go because it's almost like endorsing it.
It absolutely is. If you just let it go, you have to at least speak up here and there when you've got the facts anyway. And you do, obviously. That's just your style. You're like me. It's the proof's in the data, and you'll go through every detail of it, and you will be specialized toward the trucking industry. And these guys are going to regular old CPAs who think they have a light grasp on the new law, aren't going to know exactly how it relates to your industry. So, yeah, it's kind of your duty to do that, Kevin. I follow all those same things and all those things you post on. I find it entertaining, and I learn from it, too. I mean, there's something to be learned in all of that. So, yeah, I follow along, and, yeah, sometimes it's entertainment, and it's always education. So, yep.
Well, and that's what I have to keep telling myself, because I got into one of these this morning, and the other person was very, very persistent. Like, they kept having to post, and I just kept countering and saying, no, that's not correct. You can have an opinion, but this isn't about opinion. This is fact. You know, and at some point he said, well, I'm honored to have so much of your attention. He said it sarcastically, and I said, look, this isn't about you. I could care less what you believe. I'm never going to convince you. This is about the other people following this discussion.
Yep. So, well, you're going to have an interesting year. How much of that applies now? Yeah. Not that this is our forte, but so the new tax law is in effect. So when you're filing everybody's stuff for last year, it doesn't have much of an impact, does it?
Zero.
Or
zero impact.
Zero, that's what I figured. Okay.
No, nothing. Yeah, nothing changed. And this is why it's really confusing, because we're filing tax returns right now and we're talking about tax law changes, but you have to separate the two. The tax returns we're filing, nothing changed, not one iota. But starting on January 1st, you should be operating knowing the new tax laws, because there are some changes that need to be made. We're helping a lot more owner-operators incorporate. You know, that's a math problem, always has been. It has nothing to do with legal protection. It's just a tax issue. And you have to do the math on every individual case. And we've helped people do that for years, but now the math has changed. So you have to understand how to do the new math to determine should you be incorporated or not, you know, for a tax advantage. And you have to do that now, because you only have about 90 days to file that corporation for this year. So we've got to help people with those math numbers, should you be incorporated or not. And those have changed. And a lot of tax preparers are not up on that. They haven't gone through the calculations to figure that out. I spent about 40 hours writing spreadsheets. Normally, we would be able to run these kind of scenarios through our tax software. The tax software is not going to be done anywhere near in enough time to, you know, get your business set up right this year, because we have to wait for the IRS to do their forms, then the software companies to make all their changes. So the only way to do this was to write a spreadsheet, you know, interpreting the new rules. And the numbers are showing that a lot more owner operators would benefit from being incorporated than under the old rules. So my point in all this, leading up to all this, was, you know, you guys are going to have to do most of the work on this show, because I'm kind of brain dead.
Okay, well, as you know, we had kind of a rough week last week. I don't have much new to talk about unless Ethan's got something.
I just have the truck that driver dropped off there, and it comes to having interesting problems. It had been to about 8 different shops, and the owner had actually spent the value of the truck on the truck trying to get it fixed. It had some interesting issues, and JR ended up spending 28 hours on the truck, and in the end he did fix it, and the guy, he called back today thrilled with it. So finally he's got a truck that's out there getting 9.5 miles to the gallon. It was a medium duty truck though, it hasn't run right in the last 5 years
after someone else had their
hands in it.
Yeah.
Just didn't run, and he had taken it to several shops, and they kept replacing fuel system parts. And after about 3 sets of injectors and a couple fuel pumps, and those high pressure pumps aren't cheap. They even changed, I think, the turbo at one point,
So it turns out it was a calibration issue instead.
Yeah.
Was it?
So it took them about 28 hours to track the problem down though.
Wow.
So some of these problems aren't simple to solve, but the guy called back thrilled today. He's like, it's out running around great.
Well, you wouldn't believe the amount of code that's in these ECMs to operate these things. And sometimes if someone has messed with a line of it somewhere, it's literally finding a needle in the haystack. And this was a situation where we couldn't just rewrite it as stock because of the work that had been done to the truck. So we had to go through and figure it out, right?
So yeah.
Pretty much what it was, yeah. I
had a few self-created issues in there.
Yeah, there you go. Since I have tax on the brain, there's a good analogy there. So, you know, there are a lot of people that kind of know the basics, right? You know, they can go in, they can look at the usual stuff, and then if it's beyond that, they're stumped, and it took you 28 hours. How many shops, one, will take that kind of time, and two, have the expertise to be able to take that kind of time? It takes somebody, you know, like your shop, where you guys go above and beyond. You study, you dig, you try to solve problems, you try to, you know, develop your own strategies and you know, ways of fixing these things. You just don't find that very often. And I tell people it's the same thing with taxes. I do a lot of tax reviews. People send their tax return to me and say, it's being done right. And most of the time, I don't find mistakes. I mean, I occasionally find them, but nothing big, because look, if your accountant can't do the tax return correctly, then you absolutely need to run the other way. But it goes much farther than just not making a mistake. And I'll talk about that a little bit when I come back, because it's a lot like this issue. You know, you had to go much deeper than just the basics to find this. And that takes a whole different skill level. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Robbie. Back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me. We're mixing up taxes and ECMs, but there's a correlation here. So a lot of times I'll look at the tax return and I'll tell the client, not a single mistake. They did everything right. They understand depreciation. They got your per diem correct, but there's a lot of missed opportunities. You could be paying your kids to work in the business, big tax deduction. Your spouse might be able to take per diem even if she doesn't drive, big tax deduction. You're not deducting vacations. And then I can go on and on and on. It's missed opportunities. They didn't do anything wrong. They just didn't do enough. You know, you can look at a lot of ECMs and say, well, there's nothing wrong with the ECM, but it's certainly not optimized.
Oh, absolutely, Kevin.
Yep. Yeah, same deal.
Yeah, so that's the difference. That's where, yeah, they didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes they do, but they didn't do everything right. They didn't do everything they could have been doing to optimize the situation. So that's my tie-in between taxes and ECMs.
Well, that's the whole philosophy. We'll spend the extra time. I try really, really hard to not let the guys throw parts at stuff. It's really a philosophy of mine. I don't like that. Not that we don't every now and then put the wrong part on a truck. I mean, it's going to happen. But usually it was in an effort to save you some money or save some time. I mean, we had an issue where we'd seen a problem with a cat that turned out to be the ECM. They've got these step-up transformers, would you call them, to create the 100 volts for the injectors?
Yep.
And they break down once in a while. So, you know, a set of injectors for a cat nowadays is up around
$3,600-ish.
Yeah, $4,200 bucks installed. An ECM is like $1,400. So it's like, well, it's one or the other. Let's say we do the ECM now and see what happens, and then later. Or yeah, but you know, you may end up putting both on farther down the road. But yes, yeah, so things happen. But we do our best to not throw parts at things, and we really try to, you know, try to save the guys a buck when we can.
Yeah, one thing I love to do is when speed sensors on for the vehicle speed. Everybody loves to replace them whenever it's they'll put like four of them on there, and then I get the truck and I'm like, well, we're not putting a new speed sensor on it again.
That wasn't it. No.
If it didn't solve the problem the first four times, it probably won't the fifth.
Yeah, it's funny how everybody knows the definition of insanity, but they keep doing it anyway.
Yep. Yep. And it always seems to be a sensor too, which drives me crazy. There's really not a whole lot to sensors to go wrong.
It either works or it doesn't.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. So,
right.
But they're always vilified. Yeah.
Yeah, I always get that afterwards. It worked for a little bit. I'm like, no, it never. It didn't fix the problem.
Yep.
John, I've probably told you this before, because I use this line a lot, because when I heard this from Mike Beckett, it was such a light bulb moment, but it applies in so many areas. It was when I was first learning about truck alignments through Mike Beckett, and I was shocked at how easy it was, how simple. I always thought alignment was some black magic voodoo kind of thing because I didn't understand it. But when he described it to me and he showed me how to align a truck, three-axle alignment with, you know, chalk, a tape measure, and string, I'm like, wow. And then my first thought was, wait a minute. If this is so damn simple, how come these shops that I go to that have technicians that have been doing this for 25 years don't get this, and I can't get a good alignment on my truck? And he said, Kevin, the first thing you have to realize is, he says, there are very, very few people that have 25 years of experience in anything. He said, most people have 1 year of experience 25 times. And that was such a light bulb moment for me. I thought, that's exactly what I'm fighting against, because I can't count how many times I'm talking to somebody who does something for a living, but I know more about it than they do. Just because I think and dig and do the research and ask questions. But that was such a light bulb moment for me, and you can see that in every walk of life.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. That's the funny one. The alignment one is that that's a neat analogy. I'd worked on road going cars. You know, I worked at Bruce's shop when I was a teenager, and then I worked on road going cars and some racing stuff when I was a kid. And, you know, the shops that I'd worked at or had friends that worked at had these expensive, crazy laser computerized alignment rigs in there. And it was always sort of a dark, you know, like a black art, like you said. Then I get into racing. I'm like, man, they probably have some really, really crazy stuff here. You know what we use in racing?
Right.
We use two bars hung off the front and the back of the car with a string run down each side that are equidistant from the center of the car. So you create a box that's equal to the center of the car, and you do all your setup from that. It's done. It's easy. It's all it needs to be. Nothing fancy at all. I'm like, well, where are the laser beams and computers and shit? And
I
know. They don't exist. Just don't use them.
That was my exact experience. I was so shocked when I learned all that. And to this day, and when you listen to Mike Beckett explain why those giant, you know, computerized laser alignment racks, why they're the problem, not the solution.
Oh.
They create far more problems than they ever solve.
Yep. So that's funny how that, you know, I love technology, don't get me wrong, but it all goes through a stage.
Oh,
and
me
again,
too.
It's the garbage in, garbage out. How many people really know how to use that fancy computer alignment rack? Very few. And, you know, all technology goes through stages where it's really not efficient. An old racer friend in Pittsburgh has passed away now, but he said when the fuel injection came out on the Corvette, he was racing Corvettes. He's like a pseudo factory team back in the 60s, and they had the fuel injected car. And he was like, man, on a good day, that fuel injection works almost as good as a carburetor. Now, that's changed by these days, but back then it was.
Yeah, that's an interesting line. Because comparing the two now, I mean, ridiculous.
Well,
but,
not even close now, but
yeah,
it took 40 years, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, the other thing is, you know, that you talk about, do they even understand how to use that sophisticated equipment? Were they trained right? But the other big thing is how often those need to be calibrated and how they don't get calibrated. Shops don't even bother.
Right.
And that's a big part of the problem.
No.
It's not hard to calibrate a string and a tape measure.
Yep. So that's you have to
All
look
right.
at it correctly, but that's about it. Yep.
Yeah.
Let's
what
take
do you
some
say
calls.
We get to some
What's
questions.
Going on?
Let's do that. Let's go to Georgia. Paul, welcome to the program.
How long is a piece of string, though?
Well, that's why you have to calibrate your tape measure. You have to calibrate your tape measure first.
So my string of choice is a fly fishing line is the best. It's easiest to see. So I use fly fishing line and pull it tight.
Hook, log, and sinker. Well,
high tech.
I got my truck back again. So
yeah.
That's $4,800 I've spent this year. I had the doser pump, the DEF, it was cracked. So they replaced that, replaced the knock sensor, all checked okay at this time. I drove about 100 miles, and guess what? I got another check engine light back on.
Your check engine light again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next time you're here, we're just going to take the bulb out of that thing.
Barbecue time or something, I don't know. But if I was to schedule an engine rebuild and get the after treatment system all sorted out so it all works properly, I'm sort of asking you to guess the length of the piece of string. How long is it going to take Pittsburgh Power, approximately, if all goes well?
Right now we could get that done probably in about 10 working days. We might be able to get it done quicker. I don't want to, give you a prediction I can't make, but I'd say 8 to 10 working days. So if we could have her down for 2 weeks, that'd be good.
Yeah, well, it's been down.
And we'll take care of those problems for you one way or another. So
when I got it towed to Cummins last time in Mississippi, and he said, because when I called him, I said, if I get it towed down there, because it derated, I said, can you look at it today? And that was the Thursday. He said, yeah, I'll look at it. And he said, if it's something simple, I'll get you fixed and get you rolling. Okay, thanks. Well, Friday lunchtime, I called him. He says, well, you've got a bunch of code showed up. He says, I won't get to it till next week. So it actually sat there for a week, and they worked on it for less than a day. But it sat there for a week. Yeah.
Now, Paul, if you come soon, we're actually booking for next week right now. We're not super busy. We're down a guy or two in the shop right now, but I've got an empty bay at the moment. But if you got in here sometime in the next week, or give me a call. But like I said, we're booking for next week already. We're only booking about half a week out right now, so we'll get you right in.
Okay. I might have to do that because it's starting to annoy me.
Yeah. Yeah, call me or Pete. Either one of us put you on the schedule.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Paul. See ya.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. We're going to head off to Indiana this time. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thank you guys so much for the show.
Hold on, Matt. Sorry about that. You're thanking me, and I got to put you back on hold. I should have been paying attention to the clock, but I was answering text
questions. It's all right. Your brain did.
Yeah, I know. I was answering tax questions online again, of all things. That's because I know you and Ethan can handle this. You've got this without me. Except I have to push the button for next time. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Russell. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. John and Ethan are here with me, and we are going to go back to Matt. So, Matt, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys, for the show. And appreciate you taking a break, because now I've got you for a whole segment.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Hey, I'm a new owner operator. In July, I signed my lease purchase for a 2017 Volvo, and I love this truck so far. The first question I've got is, it kind of sounds like Pittsburgh Power doesn't do a whole lot on Volvos. Am I right?
We do not.
Okay. All right. So, I'll skip the question about tuning then and go on to, hopefully this is a more general question. I've heard that the flex pipe, I've got great warranty on the after treatment system, but the flex pipe right before it tends to break and the insulation goes into the after treatment system and the dealership does not cover that. Could you guys give a recommendation for maybe when I should change a flex pipe to give me the best chance of not dealing with that?
Well, I can only go by experience on the Cummins. They break the flex pipe that goes to the after treatment system as well, and it seems to happen in about 250,000 miles. So you might want to change that thing every 200,000 or so. Take a look at it at that point and then do it and see what happens. But they've got one that breaks also. Same deal.
So that's really valuable to me because that'll probably keep me from an expensive redo. And then the next question, which could be kind of general, I heard the guys at Pittsburgh talk one day about cleaning the vanes on the turbo because you're going to get some carbon buildup on there. What's a recommend mileage for me to do that?
I thought I'd go with about the same 200,000-250,000. A quarter of a million. We may have something for you there soon. We're working on this flush system for the EGR system.
I heard
I about
that
on the show a few weeks ago. Yeah, it's a foam. It's this. It's interesting. It's interesting material. It cuts carbon like you wouldn't believe. So we did a system. It runs through the engine, through the exhaust, back feeds and front feeds. It goes each direction and just pushes the stuff everywhere. And it makes its way out, it actually cleans your DPF as well, because it goes through everything, goes the whole way out the pipe. And if you've got any leaks, it'll show up. If you've got some problem, it'll show up and the stuff will leak out. But what we did was borescope the turbo when we were done. And the Holsa turbo, it's got, they're either Inconel or some sort of stainless on the vanes for the VG, and the aperture that opens and closes for the VG is also stainless. So, everything else that was steel was still carbon black. You couldn't see, much color there. And you stuck the borescope in and you got to the point where the vanes were and they looked like new, like it took everything right off of that stainless or Inconel. And it's something that, again, we're pretty sure we're purchasing the system or in the process of purchasing the system to do this right now. It's a shop or company in Ohio who builds it. They're right over in Youngstown. And, it's a really neat system. So we will be able to do that on a Volvo. That won't be a problem at all. It comes with the adapters to do it on pretty much any engine. So that's something that you'd want to consider, $250,000 or so.
All right. So say every 250,000 miles, I could make a trip out to Pittsburgh and just have you clean my emission system for me?
Absolutely. Yeah. We could do that. Yep.
That'd be great. And then while I'm there, I can pick your brains and you can look at, see if there's anything that you can do for me to keep me running good.
Absolutely. The usual stuff works. I mean, the fleet air filter and the OPS system and all that sort of stuff is worth having. So you need to go with all that. We don't have manifolds. We don't have turbos for that. We don't have, there's a lot of stuff. We don't have tuning for it. We're just getting up to speed. I think Ethan's close to having DD15, new DD15 tuning done here shortly. So we're making some progress on the modern stuff, but, the progress has been slower than I'm comfortable with. So Volvo is pretty far down the line if we were to get to that point.
Well, new DD15 tuning is exciting because I think that's still the number one best-selling engine on the market. I think there's more DD15s being sold now than anything. So, and that's how you have to focus your priorities. I mean,
that's why it's prioritized like that. Yeah.
You guys put a lot of time and effort and research and development resources into each engine, and you just can't put that into an engine you only see every once in a while. You got to start at, the best-selling engine and work your way down. Let's see. Oh, hey, you know what? Let me get to another call because I'll get off on a story and we'll take up the whole show. We're going to go to Washington. Chad Well, hold on. Let me get this in the right order. We're going to go to Missouri. Ken, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Kevin. Hello, John, and everybody up in Pittsburgh. Been truck shopping, Kevin, and weeding through these things. First one I looked at had an accident, threw it out. Second one, started the engine, check engine light, so threw it out. Third one, front end is shaking terrible, threw it out. It's hard to find a truck. But anyway, I've got an ECM report here on one. It's out of state, but what should I look for on an ECM report?
John, Ethan, before you guys answer that, because let me jump in there first. John, just so you know the process that I teach people, and it's a general, but we use it for anytime you have a big list of possibilities. For example, there's tens of thousands of trucks for sale. Most people look for a truck they want. So they see a truck, they like the model, they like the color, the interior's in good shape, they drive it, nothing's wrong, they buy it. The approach I take is I turn that equation completely upside down. And I say, every time you look at a truck, I want you to work as hard as you possibly can to eliminate it. Find some reason not to buy this truck. And as soon as you find one, move on. Because when you get to the truck that no matter how hard you try, you can't find a reason not to buy it, now you know you've got the right one.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, something is, as soon as Ken looked at a truck and found something, he threw it out. So now he's got a truck with an ECM report. So, Ken, what engine and what year?
2013. It's a T660. It's got an ISX. And it says here it's a CM2250.
Okay, now the last ECM report I looked at with one of our remote dealers, it actually had listed in Cummins the number of times it failed to do a regen.
Incomplete
regen. Is that on
regen.
This report?
Ah,
incomplete
is.
Regen 12.
Ooh, that complete. I would be a little concerned.
Yes. Yep.
640.
There's a lot of great info on there, actually.
Yeah, that will be, especially on an ISX, would probably be enough reason to just move on. That's a lot of incomplete regens.
Yeah, the trucks that we chose out for them were the two out of the three that we chose, both of them had zero failed regens.
Okay.
What kind of truck are you looking for in particular? We've got a line on a nice fleet of trucks that we've got one here right now that we're doing a quick go over on for a customer. It's got a kind of a customer to customer deal. A larger fleet that we do some business with is turning over some trucks right now.
These happen to be some fleet CFI trucks, and they're T660s, okay. single drive axle with a tag axle, ISX 10 speed, 250 something gears.
Oh, that should work
yeah,
well.
I love the specs. Right.
I like the spec too, yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, if you're interested, you could email me. If you'd like to email me those ECM reports, I could go over them for you or we could talk about them. They should be in PDF format, I imagine they gave them to you. They just give them to you printed.
Yeah, I've got it. This one I've got in PDF.
Feel free to forward that to me, john@pittsburghpower.com, and I'll give it a look and over and we could talk about it. Or if you get some more in the future, if you want to say, hey, I don't like that truck to them, but you maybe have another one. I'll do that for you too. But yeah, no problem at all.
Yeah, I say they've got a lot of these all over the country. We started, you know, the closest ones here in Kansas City, and then, you know, now they shoot me one for that's up in Omaha. I think they got a couple down in Joplin, Springfield. So you know, just working your way out on that.
Okay.
You know, from nearest to farthest.
But you know, I'd be glad to take a look at those ECM reports. Either myself or Ethan could take a look at it and tell you, you know, what raises flags and what doesn't.
How many miles are on this truck?
Hold on a second. Let me bring Ken back. Ken, how many miles?
527,000 on this particular one.
Got it.
Okay, that's a lot of regens to fail.
Yeah, so.
I think so, too. But and rather than, since they have so many of them, rather than try to take a chance on that and figure out why, just move on to the next one on the list. I think you're better off. All right. John, thank you for that service, by the way. That's awesome. I'm doing that for
people no problem.
In my class right now. Yeah, good stuff. All right, we're going to get to a break. Are we done?
This is the last segment or not, but I don't.
It is. Thanks for joining us. See you next time. If it's not, we'll be coming back. Kevin Rutherford.
Couldn't be it. How close are you on the
back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Now it's the final segment. John, Ethan, I told you guys, you got to help me out here. I can't even keep track of what segment we're on. Had a moment of panic there. I didn't know if the show was over, what I should be saying, but we've got time for a couple more questions, so we're going to get to it right now. We're going to go to Washington. Chad, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
What's on your mind today?
Well, I got to get my truck washed, and I had a couple of things. I had a coolant leak on the engine, and there's coolant all over down under there. And I've always kind of wondered about getting the engine washed when I go to like a Blue Beacon or something, and what I should be watching out for, what to tell them to stay away from. You know, I mean, driving up to a Blue Beacon and having the engine washed when the engine's hot kind of throws some red flags in my head. It always has.
I guess there are differing opinions on this. I kept mine washed. My drivers were instructed to wash the engine every time they washed the truck. So my engine was as clean as the day it was new when it had 500,000 miles on it. So I'm pretty obsessive about that. And I'd go through and I'd spray some WD on the electrical connectors and things, and I'd keep it, you know, a little bit of WD-40 or something like that sprayed on to keep things from rusting up. But I always washed an engine and never had a problem. So, yeah, I don't see that as an issue personally, but some others may have another opinion, but it was part of my maintenance always.
The only thing to be careful about is on the older Series 60, if a bolt has fallen behind the ECM, you can't see.
Yeah, some of the Series 60s, the sealing on the ECM is questionable when it's good. So that somewhat could be an issue on Series 60.
They left the perfect gap for a bolt to fall back there and vibrate a hole through the cover.
Yeah.
I've seen that a lot lately.
Yeah. So
it's a DD-15, so I don't need to worry about that. But one thing
Well, I rarely see those things dirty until the rocker box cracks and leaks oil everywhere. But other than that, they don't leak anything normally. Those things are pretty tight.
Well, I had
they do end up leaking
EGR.
Coolant on the water manifold. That happens too. But,
I had an EGR actuator. I guess it was the original one on the engine that kind of went bad, and it was just leaking out all over the place. I've drove about 50 miles and dumped about 5 gallons of coolant on the right side of the engine, and it's all over, you know, from there down. And I've also got I did the radiator, and a couple of the hoses for some reason are kind of leaking out a little bit at a time and kind of leaving this red spots after it dries kind of all over stuff, and I want to get rid of it so when I take it back to Freightliner they can fix the problem and all this stuff's not all over everything. And another thing that's kind of going on is some of the pulleys up front, for some reason, I don't know, I was down south and there was a lot of de-icer on the roads and stuff, thought maybe that might have something to do with it as well, but they're starting to squeal a little bit, and I'm not sure what to do about that either.
How many miles are on them?
There's 700,000.
See, some of that stuff you're just going to need to replace. There's sealed bearings in all those idlers, and it's
right.
good maintenance. I think if you probably even studied your manual, they probably recommended changing them by now. But at some point, you ought to put belt tensioners and idlers and a new belt on there. That stuff does not last forever. So when you start hearing
right.
those things squeak, those sealed bearings tend to dry out after so long, and next thing you know, it's going to turn red hot and go flying off. So it's when they start making some noise, you just replace those. It's usually not, they're not terribly expensive, I don't think.
Yeah, if you ignore it long enough, it will be a problem.
Yeah.
They can lock up too. I've seen that, and they
yeah.
shred your belt.
Yeah, and they shred the belt, and you're just stuck alongside the road then. But yeah, at 750, if they're all still original, it would probably be just plain good maintenance to replace them.
That's funny.
All right, Chad, gonna cut you loose. I think we got your answers there. John, I just sent you an oil sample in chat. So
I'm looking right now.
PDF,
yeah.
You might be able. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because there's some things on there I don't normally see. So I wanted you to see that when we're going to go to Canada and talk to Abe about it. Abe, welcome to the program.
Alrighty, thank you. That oil sample. Was my first thing. I also got a question about some performance issues on this engine.
Okay, so let's talk about the oil sample because you have some bizarre stuff going on here. That column for water, I have looked at thousands and thousands of oil samples. I can't remember it coming up in years and years. Normally, we don't see water in oil. We see the remnants of coolant, which are sodium and potassium. The interesting thing mm-hmm. is you have high sodium, but no potassium, or very little. But you have water.
The
I mean,
sodium,
water showed up as... go ahead.
Yep.
Yeah, well, the sodium, I was... because I've been running in a lot of salt and everything up here, like a lot of salt on the roads and everything.
That,
so I was assuming that's probably where it came from.
It can. Mm. And if the water wouldn't have been there, I wouldn't even question this. We do see in the wintertime, we do see either sodium or potassium show up on their own. And if we do, we just put it down to road chemicals because they use sodium-based and potassium-based chemicals. And if we only see one, then we usually just chalk it up to its road contamination. But I almost never see water, and you've got water showing up in greater than 0.5, which doesn't sound like much, but it is. We almost never see that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to do some digging to find out, is it just possible that your coolant is so over-diluted? Do you know if you've got a good coolant balance between water and ethylene glycol?
Not in the part of the world where he is. It can't be. He's up in he's in the Great White North, so it's got to be.
The coolant. I do have the red stuff in there, the extended life, and it's not been in there very long. Like I changed that. I don't remember exactly, but like a few months ago.
So that's a problem that we'd have to solve, and I'm not even sure where to start. I could talk to the engineers at Polaris and get some advice from them. But you've got a couple others. Your silicon jumped up to 23. Has anybody been in the engine lately,
mm-hmm.
like the top end or?
I did the top end. I do everything myself pretty much anyways, but I did the top end. Yeah, I did the top end that was in between that last sample there, so.
John, that's probably enough to show that silicon number, right, 23?
Yeah, that'd be enough. Yeah, it's just dust from the inside the shop or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So this water, the only thing that'll put water in oil is condensation. So the only way that's going to happen, you would have seen the potassium up or something else if it was actually coolant. I'm going to go with, I'd look at your crankcase breathing, make sure this thing's breathing well. If this was a road going car, I'd say you had a clogged PCV valve is what would cause the condensation in the oil and then sludgy oil after that. So I would really, and especially where you are, where it's hot and cold and hot and cold and a bit humid up there, you're going to have condensation in that crankcase. And if it's not breathing properly, that could show up as water. It might end up mixing in with the oil before it burns off. And is it your oil temp? How high does your oil temp run? Does it run beyond boiling point or no?
I don't have an oil temp gauge, or I do, but the sensor's broke on it. The oil temp is not working.
Okay, let's. You know, to me, it would be the oil's running too cold if it's not going to burn the water off that's gotten in there from condensation.
Okay.
And make sure you're breathing well. Check your breather tube. Make sure breather tube's not plugged. I'd pull that valve cover off where the breather is and make sure the baffling in there is not sludged up. That's nice and clean.
I did see some fuel, though, on this last sample as well.
Yeah, you're 2% on there, too. You've been doing some idling, maybe?
I have some, not a lot, but I noticed some what seemed to be injector problems. So, like, when I start, it would, like, almost, like, backfire at first, and then a big black cloud of smoke after it starts. And so over this weekend, I pulled out the injectors, and the O-rings were broken, and I put new O-rings on the injectors, and it's running. It's idling a lot smoother, and it's running perfect now. That's completely gone away. So I'm guessing that's where that came from.
Yeah, you may very well have an O-ring weeping a little bit into the oil there. Yep.
Now, we do have another issue I want to get to, and there's a confusing factor. You have lead, which is usually bearings, and we're concerned, so we start watching for copper, and your copper's climbing, but it's climbing so much that I don't think it's bearings. I think it's oil cooler. But that's a confusing factor.
Uh-huh.
So, because it looks like it climbed too much to just be a bearing. We only got a little bit of lead, and all of a sudden copper went through the roof. This is a tough call, though. I'm not sure if I would inspect the bearings or just do a short oil sample to see if we can spot any other trends. You win the prize for the most complicated oil sample I've seen in a little while. We are all out of time this time. I've got to wrap it up. Do it again real soon. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always. The hard work. National journey. We kept running. All right, everybody. Calls are really heavy, but questions were light. Actually, calls are a little lighter than we normally have on the show, but questions are really light. I mean, I only have one or two left on the board, not enough to get us through a show. So we're going to wrap this up. We will, I'm sure we'll be back to our normal call volume next week, and we'll do 2 hours then. But thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.